Jennifer, and thanks to Paul and to Roisin and everybody for having me. I'm really excited to be 199. Woo! I'm going to read to you from my newest collection, which is Dreams for Breakfast. Just make sure I don't go over the time. And I'm going to read you the title poem first. I'm one of those people who dreams, like I have really long, big, complicated dreams, and I tend to remember them, which some people would tell you is a sign of impending schizophrenia, and other people would tell you that it's being creative, which is probably both. Anyway, that's where this book started, was I started writing down dreams, and a lot of the poems in the book started out as dreams, and this poem kind of explains that. So this is Dreams for Breakfast. Sometimes everything is blue. The hills, my hands, house keys, chimney smoke. If I bit the air, my mouth would fill with blue juice. I'm peaceful, though I wonder what casts such a big shadow. Or I'm on a bus with plaid seat covers. The other passengers are wilted, short of breath. I think I missed my stop. Other times I walk through a silent city of stone, and nothing is where I remember, except the swans and the church on the hill. I unwrap these dreams for you over breakfast. You say they are big budget, technicolor, while yours are pocket-sized, abridged. Small men, in smaller circumstances. You butter the toast and laugh. I smile, marooned in all this blue distance. So the book starts and ends with family poems. The first poem is about my grandmother and who I was named for. She lived and died in Belfast, and on April 16, 1941, Belfast was bombed all night long from like 10 o'clock at night till 5 or 6 in the morning. They were not adequately prepared for it, and the city was decimated. My grandmother on that evening would have had two very small children with her, and she would have been 8 months pregnant with my mother. And my grandmother's long since passed away. Nobody seems to know how she got through that night. Obviously she did, and of all the stories that get passed down in families, all the silly ones and crazy ones, nobody seems to remember to ask her how she got through that night, and it really bothers me that we don't know. So just to write her back into history, I've written a poem imagining what it might have been like. So this is that, Belfast, April 1941. Susie Miller of Mackey Street, the tall tales we tell of bombs involve your husband Dusty with his pint staring down the IRA. No one seems to have taken down your story. You emerge from the piss-smelling darkness, from the hole full of weeping, climb a ladder into light, eye-pricking gray-white. You must have squinted. Even cloudy light is light. A child tugs on each hand, your belly swelling. You step aside to let others pass. Smell of meat cooking. Woman sobbing. Paul. Paul. Glimpse of staring eyes, a dust-caked face before they cover it with a blanket. Merry crackle of flames, so much light. The world changed. All you knew, the light comes through, empty windows, walls with nothing behind them, salt on your lips. You didn't know you were crying. So much light. You walk through the city like so many others, looking for something familiar. She emerges. From the dark pickling of your womb, her cave from which she eavesdropped, adds her thin mule to the mix. The air raid sirens, the shattering glass, the booms. That's my grandmother. And writing that got me thinking about how much of our lives are dictated by where and when we're born. And we have absolutely no say in this, and plop, there we are, making the best of it or not. And I was lucky. I was born in Philadelphia in 1966, and a month before I was born, my parents went to a Beatles concert. So this is a poem about that. This is the first poem was at the beginning of the book, this is the end of the book. And it's called Philadelphia, August 1966. I was lucky. Wound in the woman with the cat's eyeglasses, the chic French twist at the Beatles concert. Their last tour, a hot day, the band miles away across a field pristine as astronauts' dreams of the moon. Can't buy me love, just a rumble squeak beneath the horny, joyful screams. The young one behind my mother sobs, Paul, Paul. Mom doesn't scream. Her husband beside her pens in his breast pocket, his hair just beginning to lick at his ears. He owns a guitar, my dad. It leans against the living room wall like a moon he plans to visit. Her moon, me. First roundness, first flag on planet family. She steals looks at my handsome father and loves him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She believes in him, and he believes in him, and the moon is waiting. Anything is possible. I was made from this. Of course, dreams also refers to ambitions as well as our nighttime dreams. And this is my recession poem. Every poet has to have one now, and this was mine. This is an office building quite near where we live that was stone and glass. It's very beautiful, and it sat there for the longest time, absolutely empty, nothing in it. Now there's a couple people, I think, living in the apartment at the top, but there's still nothing in the bottom part, and it just sits there. So this is for that, and it's called Vacant Building. All we had wanted was something better. Marble countertops, floor-to-ceiling glass, high above rush hour's blinking river. We parted our lips for ambition's kiss and woke with this glistening high-rise blister. Ozymandian Towers, red on white, its facade has the cold-eyed glamour of lipsticked corpse on a quiet street. At the reception desk, the empty chair, a future shiny as magazine paper, dulled now to a finish blank and bare as these windows. We glance inside, quick, then laugh a laugh that's wet with despair. Nothing to see but ourselves staring back. To go with that, I want to read a poem about Albert Speer. Do you guys know who Albert Speer is?
Yeah.
For those who don't, because I didn't for the longest
architect.
Time. That's right. Hitler's architect. There, that's all you really needed to know. Brilliant architect, designed the Nuremberg rallies, the spotlights, the eagles, all that crap. That was him, right? And I read his autobiography, and the sense that I got from reading it is that his involvement had less to do with politics than it did with aesthetics. He really liked the spotlights and the eagles and whatnot. He went to Spandau Prison after the war for 20 years, and while he was there, he re-landscaped the garden at Spandau Prison, and apparently did this incredibly elaborate job with that as well. And there's something weirdly moving about that to me, that like wherever you put this guy, that's what he does. You know, with no conscience, which is the problem, obviously, but there's still something kind of moving about that to me. So this is a poem about Albert Speer in Spandau. It's in his voice, and it's called Plans. I start with plans, penciled notes, dimensions of walkways, width of beds. I see pink azalea, slender blue iris, white rose. Names of flowers, like the names of beautiful women, warm my lips. Ripe plums, red gold apples, stones shaped by storms, and I, author, angel, God. A man who sees things as they could be. Is this the man I chose to be? The other prisoners laugh at me. Number five, the yapping pup. Give him the run of the garden. Keep him out of our hair. I like to keep busy. Smell the damp earth. In my dreams, a girl in white with shining hair laughs. Does not call me number five, but Albert. Hands me Berlin in the shape of an apple. I close my fingers on its warm weight. Wake. Yes, I'm the man I chose to be. A man who saw not what was, but only what could be. I started with plans. I want to read a funny one now. After Albert Speer, one feels the need to be. Comedic. You guys know who Stephen Fry is?
Yes.
The guy from QI and Brian Laurie. Okay. I had a rather romantic dream about Stephen Fry several months ago. I really did, and I wrote a poem about it, mostly for my own amusement, and I have discovered there are an astonishing number of women who feel similarly towards Mr. Fry. And every time I read this poem, at least one woman comes up to me afterwards and goes, oh. So, this is true. This was the dream. Anyway, it's called I Dream Stephen Fry. He kisses me. I know, but it's my dream, and he kisses me. First he gazes down at me. He is very, very tall, with his painfully wise, sympathetic eyes, tells me we must face what is happening between us. His voice is an oboe with an English accent. Then he kisses me. It goes on and on. His mouth a perfect moistness. His saliva champagne. Did I mention he wears a tux? He presses me up against a classic Roman column, probably holding up a building I didn't notice. The stone's been warmed by a setting sun that gilds the scene, as Fitzgerald would say, like a benediction. Somewhere, church bells ring. Don't analyze. No, Stephen Fry does not resemble my father. No, I don't seek validation by turning a homosexual. Let's not talk about little girl dreams of horses or boy bands, say fantasy objects. That's not what this is. What it is. Somewhere there should be a place where men with clean fingernails who can name King Lear's daughter look good in his tux and have sympathetic eyes, wait to, want to, need to kiss someone like me as the sun sets like a benediction and somewhere church bells ring. Kevin, you want a quick name, King Lear's daughters?
Goneril, Regan, and Cordelia.
That's why I'm married. I'm just messing. Okay. So one long one and one short one, and then I'll go away on ABB. This is a five-part triolet. Don't be frightened. That sounds a lot worse than it is. Triolet is just a poem that it's got a lot of repetition in it, which is why I mentioned. You hear the repetition, you'll know what that's about. And this is called Outside the Crane Bar. There's a bar called the Crane Bar in Galway, and I was going to a poetry event there one evening, and this guy I know called Jer was standing outside. He was drinking a pint, and I started talking to him, and he was in bits because a friend of his had been killed very unexpectedly in a car accident a day or two before. And it was one of those horrible situations where there's absolutely nothing you can say. You know, there's no way that you're going to make this okay or even better, and you're just standing there with the person and just not knowing what to say. And he was in bits. And all I could think to say was, come inside, come back inside to the poetry reading. Not because I thought that poetry would solve anything, but because I thought at least he'd be distracted a little bit for a little while. And he said that he would join me inside, and I never saw him again that evening. So this poem is about that feeling of helplessness, I guess. So this is Outside the Crane Bar for Jer Ward. One, living depends on not knowing. Moonless blue, no stars to follow. Between the cobbles, weeds are growing. Living depends on not knowing how suddenly life can go. On seldom swimming past the shallows. Living depends on not knowing. Moonless blue, no stars to follow. Two, street lamps make the scene look frail. In the square, stilled by chains and rust, the old cattle market scale. Street lamps make the scene frail. Solid iron looks spectral, pale. Gone the hands that worked it, as hands must. Street lamps make it sepia, frail. The scale is stilled by chains and rust. Three. Long gone are the hands that hoisted hooves, bellies, heads, creatures missing open land. Long gone the many hands, the cow's complaints. The scale now stands near honking cars instead. Who thinks of the many hands that measured hooves, bellies, heads? Four. Living depends on not knowing, so in the crane they're busy forgetting. Hands on pints, fairy lights glowing, living depends on not knowing that even as they're here, they're going. Dying each minute, it's too upsetting. Take refuge in not knowing. In the crane, they're busy forgetting. Five. You should go too. Back inside, where poets almost rhyme and fiddlers play, where laughter forces grief to hide. Come on, let's go back inside. Tomorrow, the dead will still be dead, and we'll fold our hands and we'll try to pray. For now, please, let's go back inside, where poets almost rhyme and fiddlers play. That's for sure. And this is just a little one, real short, just to lighten the mood before I disappear again. This is just a poem about feeling lucky, walking home and realizing how blessed I am. So this is called Blessing. Evening. Light loosens its grip. Saints gather, clouds in their hair, wish for flesh enough to feel this warm June rain, soft air. Walking through wet streets, home. Here I am. Here I want to be. Thank you.